I work on freelance and why it matters to me and the important history of LGBTQ superheroes. To introduce you to freelance, first of all, the book launched last year. There was a 4-issue initial run written by myself and Jim Zub, who is now writing The Avengers over at Marvel, and with art by Vanita Veriak and Cindy Long. And Volume 2 launches this summer with art by Juan Samu and Vanita Veriak. And what's special about this book is this character of freelance was created in the 1940s. He's one of the very first Canadian superheroes created during the era when it wasn't possible to import superhero comics from the United States because comics were considered non-essential or luxury items. And so there is this lost era of Canadian superheroes from the 1940s. There was briefly quite a few of them for a period of, you know, the wartime basically. And when the war ended and the restrictions lifted, the American imports flooded back in, and we lost all of those superheroes. And some of them are now getting a sort of second shot at life. Freelance, aka Lance Valiant, was the second ever Canadian superhero. The first was called Iron Man, but not the one you're thinking of. He won't be revived because the name has obviously been claimed by someone else. But Freelance is now a public domain superhero. He's created by Ed Furness and Ted McCall, and was originally a globe-trotting adventurer who travelled with his companions John and Natasha. John was a pirate and Natasha was a spy, and in the original version John and Natasha had a sort of, well, they weren't, they, sexual chemistry going on. In deciding to revive the character for the present day for its new shared universe, which includes characters like Captain Canuck, Northgard and Pitiful Human Lizard, who are superheroes created in Canada by Canadian authors over the last 40 years or so, they decided they wanted to make the new version of Freelance reflect Canada as it is today and to reflect modern Canadian values. So to that end, they decided that instead of having sexual chemistry with his female companion, his chemistry would be with his male companion. And so that's what we've done with Freelance, is brought him bang up to date. He's still punching fascists in the face, but with a different team, a more diverse team behind him. Natasha, instead of being a Russian spy, is now a Canadian Inuit engineer, and John Cabot is still a smuggler, but he's mixed race and bisexual, and Lance, of course, is gay, and Lance and John are the central romantic couple. And what was exciting to me about this opportunity is, first of all, that Chapter House would do something so bold as launching their shared universe line with a gay superhero, something that very few publishers would consider doing, but also the fact that they would approach me as a gay writer, as a gay author, to help launch this line. It was important to them to have that representation and that authenticity. They wanted to make sure that superheroes that spoke to real Canadian values were written by people that shared those values. And it has been a lifetime ambition of mine to write gay superheroes. I have been an advocate for LGBTQ representation for as long as I've been involved in comics. First as a fan, then as a journalist, now as a writer of comics. For me, there was no such thing as a gay superhero when I was a kid. North Star, who famously came out in this panel in March 1992, so 26 years ago or so, in Alpha Flight 106 by Lobdell and Pacella, that was when I was 16 years old. So I had gone through my entire adolescence without ever seeing an out gay superhero in a mainstream comic book. There had been reference to gay characters in previous comics. For example, in 1980, there was a famous scene in The Incredible Hulk, written by Jim Shooter, in which a couple of teens at the YMCA attempted to sexually assault Bruce Banner. There was the character of Arnie Roth in Captain America, who was forced by Baron Zemo to dress up in fancy clothing and deny his own love for his husband, or his boyfriend, who he never referred to explicitly in those terms. There was Extraño, the famous Doctor Strange pastiche in DC Comics. This is an example of how the only visibility for gay people in superhero comics was in pastiche and stereotype. The only way you could believe that a character might be gay was if they represented the sort of narrow-minded view of what it meant to be gay, because they couldn't be shown to have relationships, they couldn't be shown to be people in love, and they couldn't be shown, of course, to be sexual beings in any way. One of the closest representations that we got was the characters of Destiny and Mystique in the X-Men, who Chris Claremont intended to be not just lovers, but the parents of Nightcrawler, because Mystique, as a shapeshifter, was able to turn into a man and father a child with Destiny. This was not made explicit, their relationship, for many, many years, and the decision to have Destiny and Mystique be the parents was actually... It never came to pass. Nightcrawler ended up having Mystique as his mother and another character as his father. So these were lesbian lovers who were deniable. It was never stated on the page at the time. And of course, they're villains, which was fairly typical for queer representation at the time. Another example from 1988, there was a scene in the comic Marvel Man, a Shazam pastiche, in which a child is sexually assaulted, and that leads him to commit widespread murder and eventually have to be killed. So as you can see, mostly exceedingly negative representations. And even one of the more positive representations, the character of Pied Piper, who came out in 1991, a year before Northstar, he was a reformed villain in the pages of The Flash. But even in that scene, the conversation was about whether or not the Joker was gay. And as you can see from this panel from Frank Miller's Dark Knight Returns, that was a pretty common representation of that character in that era. Joker was another character whose apparent queerness was tied to his sociopathy. There were similar tones in Watchmen where gay characters were represented as possibly psychopaths and certainly as victims of horrible assault. For a long time, that was really the only time we saw ourselves in comics, in superhero comics especially. There were also some examples of non-binary or genderqueer depictions, such as Starhawk in The Guardians of the Galaxy, Sir Tristan in Camelot 3000, the story of Element Lad in Legion, and a character named Masquerade in Blood Syndicate. These were all characters that could switch genders in some sort of magical or technological way, but they weren't used to explore realistic depictions of gender or queerness. The reason for all of these failures of positive representations and rather painful negative depictions or incomplete depictions is the Comics Code Authority, of course. The Comics Code Authority, introduced in the 1950s, forbade gay representation. Oh, I can't actually show you the text because it doesn't come up in this program, unfortunately. Let me see if I can pull it up.
Isn't it going to be doing a talk on the LGBT community?
Yeah, that's happening. Sorry, I'm using the wrong program here, and it's not showing the text. But essentially, the Comics Code Authority at the time said that illicit sex relations should not be depicted in comics, sexual abnormalities should not be depicted, the sanctity of marriage must be preserved, and sex perversions should be condemned. At no point did the Comics Code Authority explicitly reference gayness, gay love, LGBTQ issues directly, but those admonitions against perversion and abnormality were clearly interpreted a certain way. And the Comic Code Authority was a self-censorship method anyway. It was an opt-in that the publishers chose, and so they interpreted it as they chose to, and they decided that gay relationships and gay characters could not be depicted. The reason we had the Comics Code Authority, of course, was because of the juvenile delinquency hearings and the author Frederick Wortham, whose book Seduction of the Innocent was published in the 50s, claiming that comics were responsible for, in part or in whole, for corrupting youth. And one of the ways that he claimed that it did that was in enticing them into lives of sexual perversion. The most famous example from Seduction of the Innocent, his very famous book, was Batman and Robin, who he claimed represented a wish dream of two homosexuals living together. It was part of his broad condemnation of the sort of amorality of comics. That in retrospect we've learned many of the interviews that he conducted for that book were fabricated or misreported, but the damage was done. He claimed to have interviewed these juvenile delinquents, as he would put it, and determined what it was that had led them into a life of delinquency. Comics was part of it, and comics embrace or representation of homosexuality, however indirect it may be, in scenes like this, for example, were held to be responsible. An interesting side note is that the young men that he interviewed about homosexuality, they were 16 and 17 years old, and they actually claimed that they didn't care very much about Batman. In the actual interviews, the character that they said they were most attracted to was Namor, but somehow that didn't make it into the history books. So Batman is not the queer icon that we have come to think of him as, not compared to the Submariner. The code was revised in 1989. At this point, it was declared that you could show representations of prevailing attitudes of the day. And it's at that point that we started to see characters like Pied Piper and North Star in 1991, 1992, 1993. But we didn't see an opening of the floodgates to show more queer representation. Just occasional characters here and there in the mainstream comics. So the character of Hector in The Hulk appeared in 94. The gender-switching version of the character Comet appeared in Supergirl in the same year. And around this time in the 90s, we saw comics aimed at an older audience, such as Starman, Enigma, Promethea, and X-Force, that became X-Statics, that did include some queer characters. But for the most part, it was still not part of the mainstream, and it was not depicted in comics aimed at a wider audience. The Authority in 1999 gave us the characters of Apollo and Midnighter. It's possible that they weren't ever intended to be gay. Warren Ellis wrote their first appearance and created the characters, and in their first appearance in the pages of Stormwatch, they were shown to be naked in a warehouse putting on their costumes. And when I asked the artist Brian Hitch about this a couple of years later, why they were naked, he said it's because he didn't have enough paper panels to show them taking their clothes off before they put new clothes on. Yet it was the fact that the two characters were shown naked together was the reason that a lot of fans, myself included, advocated for the character to be characters to be represented as gay. And it was in around 99 that, before the characters came out, that I was one of many people to send an email to Warren Ellis saying, please do this, this would be hugely important to so many people. Unfortunately, the characters still could not be shown kissing for a while after their introduction. We see this peck on the cheek, that's as close as they got for a while. There was a character... there was a Jenny Sparks miniseries released around the turn of the millennium that did have a panel of them kissing. I saw the panel at the Bristol Comic Convention that year. Artist John McCrae had the pages, and I remember seeing the kiss on the page. And then the book came out, and that panel had been cut. So someone at DC decided that it was too soon to show these characters actually embraced in a kiss in the year 2000. And this was in a comic aimed at mature readers. So we can see that there was still a lot of publisher discretion in how characters could be depicted. The editor-in-chief of Marvel in 2006, Joe Quesada, claimed that if gay characters were going to appear in Marvel books, it would have to be in a mature reader's title, despite the fact that Marvel at the time wasn't actually publishing any mature reader's books. So his directive basically forbade the appearance of queer characters, just as the Comics Code had done. The important thing to mention here is, of course, being gay is not a mature theme. Same-sex relationships are not more sexual than male-female sexual relationships. The reason that these characters are excluded is because we're seen as somehow amoral or perverse. The reason we need to see ourselves is because we know that that's not who we are. We need to see ourselves to know that we're included and to know that we're represented. And for a long time, the superhero comic industry conspired to keep us out of its pages, and then when it did come time to show us, showed us in sexless ways, showed us sometimes as monsters, sometimes as victims, and even then eventually only as eunuch couples that had no sexual interactions. Things changed though around the same time that Joe Quesada made his statement about mature readers' titles. 2006 was also the year that Batwoman became the first gay lead of a DC or Marvel character. There's a great irony in it being this character, this reinvention of the character, because the original Batwoman was introduced because of the fear that Batman appeared too gay. It was because of Batman's close relationship with Robin that he was given a female counterpart to create the appearance that he was a conventionally heterosexual, red-blooded, in the words of the day, male hero. So Batwoman went from being the thing that cured Batman of his gay cooties to being one of the most important LGBTQ superheroes that we've ever had. As part of the Bat family, she's really as major as they can be. The Comics Code was abandoned in 2011, and that's when we started to see some more significant change. In the year 2005, Alan Heinberg had introduced the Young Avengers, and he had introduced the characters of Wiccan and Hulkling. And he had intended them to be a gay couple, but he hadn't told Joe Quesada this. And it was only when the fans read between the lines and realised what these characters were and what they meant to each other that he confirmed that that was his intention. And Alan Heinberg at the time was the lead writer on the show The OC, so he had a great deal of influence and was able to get a gay couple into a book and a gay teen couple, making it all the more important. But even though the characters were introduced and established as gay in the mid-2000s, their first kiss did not appear until the year 2012, a year after the Comics Code was finally abandoned. So it's since that time, since 2012, that we've seen actual progress happening in the representation of LGBTQ characters. We've seen new characters introduced, like Darkin, the son of Wolverine, America Chavez, Bunker at DC, Anole at Marvel. We've also seen characters who had not previously been established as LGBTQ being revealed to be LGBTQ. So that includes characters like Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy, Catwoman, Richter and Shatterstar of the X-Men, the new version of the Ray, and of course Iceman, who becomes one of the other sort of most high-profile LGBTQ superheroes, simply because he's one of the oldest superheroes to come out as gay in terms of his longevity in comics. So Iceman has been with us since the early days of Stan and Jack's X-Men, since the very first issue of X-Men. And his establishment as a queer character was considered controversial by some, as is the establishing of any previously known character as LGBTQ. There is a reluctance in fandom to accept that a character previously not known to be queer could become known to be queer. This is in essentially ignorance of the way both comics work, in that it was impossible for characters to be established to be queer before a certain time because of the restrictions, and also it's ignorance of how the real world works, because most people you know who come out as queer were not previously established to be LGBTQ. That's how most of us live. It's also during this period that, of course, North Star and Midnight are characters who were at the leading edge of openly queer characters, were sort of re-established and reintegrated into the DC and Marvel universes respectively, given either their own titles or new team titles. So where does that leave us today? Have we seen a breakthrough? Or are we living in a bubble? It's encouraging to see so much progress just in the last 10 years. But what we have to realize is that a lot of queer characters have been established and then have disappeared. Sometimes a character like Marvel's Hercules can be established as bisexual, something established incidentally thousands of years ago, and still be pushed back into the closet when he has his own series. The editor-in-chief after Joker's Art, Axel Alonso, declared that bisexuality was not something they would explore when Hercules had his own series. So it's very easy to imagine a lot of the characters that we've seen introduced could simply go away. They don't, in most cases, have the longevity of characters like Captain America or Batman, because they're mostly new characters, and it's always hard to find and carve out room for new characters in these established universes, and fans do not attach to them in the same way. That's one of the reasons why I think it's important that we do have characters come out of the closet the way Iceman has done, or have characters re-established as queer in the case of Batwoman, for example. One of the other recent examples of a breakthrough character who seems to have now disappeared is the character of Sarah in the two Angela series. Sarah was one of the first major transgender superheroes in a Marvel or DC comic. As the partner of Angela, she was a major character in her series and was considered something of a breakthrough. But with the cancellation of Angela's book, I don't think the character has been seen since. And we haven't seen other major trans superheroes introduced at either Marvel or DC. There is a character called Chalice who was introduced by, I think it was Black Mask, or one of the smaller new publishers. But that character, written by Paul Jenkins, was controversial because of the way that they were depicted, and because they were not created by a member of the queer community. Which leads us, of course, to one of the important things about queer representation in superhero comics and in all fiction, is that it's at its best when it comes from authentic queer voices. We need queer creators, we need queer editors, queer artists, we need people who can tell the stories of the characters in an authentic way. We also need people who can bring the diversity to queer representation. Queer representation is not just diversifying comics. It in itself needs to be diverse. It needs to include the L, the G, the B, the T, the Q. It needs to represent asexual and aromantic and two-spirit characters. It needs to include racial diversity, diversity of ability, diversity of body shape, and of course, the entire genderqueer spectrum. One of the things that it seems we might not see for a long time is gay male heroes who are allowed to be effeminate, for example, which was the cliche of how a gay male character was presented in comics back in the day, and we've come round in a circle to the point where we really want to see the full representation of queerness as it exists today, and that means embracing the fact that many people are effeminate or femme-presenting, many people are butch or mask-presenting, and these can be presented in authentic ways by people who understand the community. Superheroes, of course, don't just exist in comics, and the other great frontier that we now face in terms of LGBTQ representation is other media. So here are two characters in the movie Thor Ragnarok, for example. Loki is a genderqueer character. Valkyrie is a bisexual character. Neither of them were represented as queer in the movie Thor Ragnarok, or in any of the movies that Loki has appeared in. The character of Korg, also in Thor Ragnarok, is a gay character. Some of the Dora Milaje, of course, in Black Panther, are queer in the comics and were not represented that way. Even where the movies are phenomenally good movies in other regards, and I think both Thor Ragnarok and Black Panther are excellent films, we're not seeing the inclusion of the characters who we have fought to see included as queer in the comics being represented the same way up on the big screen. And it's an open question now of how long it will take before we actually get to see those characters represented. One of the most high-profile, potentially queer characters of all is a character who has already led to their own movie. I refer, of course, to Wonder Woman. In an unprejudiced world, Wonder Woman's queerness would be completely uncontroversial. She grew up on an all-female paradise, Themyscira, an island where people had presumably romantic and sexual relationships, and everyone was a woman. So the idea that Wonder Woman is queer should be completely uncontroversial. She should be gay, she is gay, or bisexual. Many of her creators over time, including Gail Simone and Greg Rucka, have said that they believe the character to be queer and have written her as such. And of course the character's creators, William Moulton Marston and his wife Elizabeth Holloway Marston, conceived the character to be a sort of queer-inclusive feminist icon. But it couldn't be represented for the longest time, and in fact can't be represented to this day because of the value of Wonder Woman as IP to Warner Brothers. So while Greg Rucka in his most recent run tried to present the character as having had relationships with women, the most that he could show on the pages of his book was the same peck on the cheek that we saw in the pages of The Authority 18 years ago. And the feeling should be that if we're going to see ourselves on the page, it should be unambiguous, because there will always be those readers who can look at something where we as queer readers might see ourselves and deny our existence and deny our validity. And I would like to be in a position of saying, you cannot deny us, you cannot say that we're not here. That's one of the things that I hope to do in the pages of Freelance. So in being given a queer superhero book of my own to write, it was important to me in the first season, the first four issues that we published last year, that there be a kiss in the pages of that book. So in the fourth of the four issues, we see the couple come together with a kiss that is a climactic moment of the storyline. The second arc, the second four-issue story, launches this year. And in the first issue, this time, we have the kiss. And there will be more kisses as the series progresses, because I want it to be completely unambiguous. This is us, on the page, expressing ourselves and being seen. We can be heroes because we have to be heroes. In our day-to-day lives, we face oppression and prejudice, and it takes a hero's strength and courage to face those things. Superheroes are a medium about rising up against intolerance and injustice, and it's here, of all places, that you would think superheroes should be able to embrace queerness, that queerness should be seen. We haven't quite reached that point. A book like Freelance at Chapter House is still the rarity, not the norm, in terms of queer representation, in that it has a queer vision behind it and that it has no apologies about what it represents. One day, we hope to see the same sort of representation at Marvel, at DC, at Marvel Studios, at Warner Brothers. We can be heroes because we are heroes. And just to finish, those are the covers to Volume 2 of Freelance, so if you want to contact your store and order the books, the first issue should be coming out in a month or so's time. I'm very proud of this series. I'm very proud of the work we're doing. The first season brought our lead couple, Lance and John, together. The second season, we add that most soapy of elements, the love triangle, because that's the sort of stories that I want to see, is stories where we get to have the sort of romance and romantic tensions that have been present in comics since day one. Romance is one of the things that comics has actually done well since the start, alongside superheroes, and it has a place, and we have a place in there. That's the end of my prepared slides. If anyone has any questions for me, now would be a great time to hear that. Yes.
Okay. I don't think it's a story, but the story, the character isn't the exact opening here. It's supposed to be set in the Mutual Conflict in the years of 1950.
Sorry?
It's supposed to be set in the autumn of 1950.
Which story?
The story I'm writing. Anyway, the young girl, the character is even the young character is a female character, but it might be a transvestite too. And what ends up happening is first of all, the people who see her, she's paid off the rent for their sorority house. Anyway, they find her riding the motorcycle and they wonder what she is, because she looks very feminine, but she doesn't have any breasts, and of course they make all the snide remarks about it. And they gradually decide, because she has a kind of spunky to be a good sorority sister, mm-hmm. and because she's got good grades and she's doing all kinds of very sophisticated subjects, she'd be kind of what they need to keep their grade point average on, so you don't get stuck with a very prudish fat mother. And what ends up happening is that...
Sorry, do you have a question?
The question is, does the character have to be overt? Like, my character's not very overt.
Okay, so does the character have to be overt? I would say... It depends in large part what you're trying to achieve. If you want the credit for positive representation, then I think it does have to be overt. I think you have to put something in the page that's unambiguous. I would also say if you're writing a story set in the 1950s, you have to appreciate the attitudes of the time, the struggles that someone would face, and what the mores are at the time and what the society... You know, you mentioned the word transvestite, and that's very different to being transgender or being...
I suppose, because the girl, you're supposed to extend that time, and then you think of trying to figure out who she is, but you decide, you're glad you decide to join her group because she's so kind to them.
I think if you want to create a positive representation of gender queerness in the 1950s, then research is the answer. You have to do your research. I would hire a sensitivity reader, if you can, to look over things and make sure that what you're doing is not perpetuating negative stereotypes. And I would make sure that you're educating yourself about what the differences of different gender representations are, both in that era and in the modern day. But if the point is to present a positive representation, then sensitivity has to be learned, it has to be earned, and it has to be overt. Does anyone else have a question? Yes?
First, I want to compliment you. I really enjoyed your talk.
Thank you.
And I'm wondering if your talk is available online, perhaps, or somehow, if there would be a way for me to share some of your ideas with people who I know who would appreciate them.
Right. Well, I have a gentleman in the front row here who can answer that question.
Yes. My name is Jamie. I'm actually audio recording the panel now, so I will have it online maybe tomorrow, maybe Monday or Tuesday, but I'll have it on my website.
What is your website, Jamie?
It is, it's actually my name, and also there's thecomicbooks.com.
Okay. And will you be around tomorrow?
Yes.
Collect that from you?
Yeah.
So thecomicbooks.com or jamiecoville.com?
Yes.
Anyone listening to this online has already found those websites.
Yeah.
So yeah. For people in the room. Thecomicbooks.com.
I'm so glad I passed. Thank you. I missed the beginning, too.
I hear the first part.
I think you missed the first
part. I just missed a little bit of your introduction. But yeah.
But that's when I was promoting my own work, so that's fine. just put the links up, please, Jamie. Please.
And thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for coming. Does anyone else have any questions before we wrap up? It's the end of the day, so I'm sure people have places to be.
On the subject of gay representation and the gay's only press, what is your view of the Merry Men? Have you read that?
Thank you so much. I haven't actually read Merry Men yet. I do. Is it Robert Rody?
Yeah.
Who's the author?
Well, this seems to have vanished mysteriously for about 5 issues.
And how far did they get?
Keep the
way in the next issue. Right. I mean, my relationship with Oni is as a creator, so I have no insight into their editorial processes, unfortunately. I know that they were very proud of doing that book, which is a very sort of campy gay comedy, as I understand it. I haven't had a chance to read it.
It's Robin Hood.
Yeah. But I'm hopeful that it will will resolve. Maybe they'll jump straight to the trade if they haven't finished the issues. Anyone else? Think we're good? All right. Thank you all so very much for coming. And enjoy the rest of the convention. And have yourself a nice cup of tea and sit down.